Folks, your financial freedom is at stake when the government thrives on creating unrelenting inflation, an astronomical debt, crippling interest rates, and market turmoil that we haven't seen in decades. And now you have an administration that wants to tax everything that you have to fund runaway entitlement spending. You should empower yourself with opportunity and the freedom to pursue success and to keep the fruits of your hard work. And if you want to protect your future, you should call a precious metals dealer that I trust, American Hartford Gold. They can show you how to protect your savings and retirement accounts by diversifying your portfolio with physical gold and silver. And all it takes to get started is a short phone call. And American Hartford Gold can have physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside your IRA or 401k. They make it easy. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
You know, we need to act. These are weapons of war. I'm a Second Amendment guy. I have two shotguns. My sons have shotguns.
Oh, man, why don't we talk about that?
But our states, you know, everybody thinks somehow the Second Amendment is absolute. You're not allowed to go out and own an automatic weapon. You're not allowed to own a machine gun. You're not allowed to own a flamethrower. You're not allowed to own so many other things.
You can literally own all of these things.
Why in God's name do we allow these weapons of war in our streets and at our schools?
Wait, whoa, hold up. You can literally own all these things.
Yep.
You can literally purchase a flamethrower.
Yep.
All of these things can be purchased.
Yep.
I mean, good grief. What is it? The Elon Musk's normal company, right? They had for a while. You could get like a great deal on a flamethrower. What?
Boring? Was it called Boring?
Yeah, the Boring Company. I'm stealing that other company name that I just came up with. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here. Sidebar to Kane. Sales on flamethrowers. Let's get sales department to get a flamethrower sponsor for the Dana Show. Okay, back to the show. Welcome to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Top of this first hour on Wednesday. Always good to be with you. We're going to break down everything that's happened. And we got a whole bunch. I got some foreign policy stuff to get into. We got a lot of stuff to hit. We're still watching the developments in the Nashville tragedy. But we also have a bunch of other things on our plate because we want to give you an update on Mississippi and everything else because those people are still in the thick of it. So we want to make sure that we're covering all of our bases here. OK, so I just got to address this first thing here from Biden because you can literally own all those things, and full auto weapons aren't banned either. I mean, they're NFA items, and you have to go pay $200 to the government to allow you to purchase a product that should be entirely legal in the first place. Because anything that constitutes, as Scalia would have defined it in Heller, as arms, I think we should be able to own. But I digress. But it's how cyclical is that too, by the way? Another sidebar. Well, if you ban them, then they're not commonly owned. Thus, it doesn't meet the litmus test of the Supreme Court. So you can't say that you have a Second Amendment affirmation to own this product. Ha ha ha. So this argument that he's making here, yes, you can't own a flamethrower. We had a neighbor who drove a tank around. Used to drive just drove a tank around. It was real cool. It was the funniest thing. It was like one of the first things I saw moving to Texas. I was standing in my living room and I'm unpacking stuff and I'm like, what is that in my cul-de-sac? Forgive me. I'm sorry. I don't know all my tanks, but it was one particular type of tank. It was like a smaller British something or other. I don't know. All the British people listening, there's some. They're going to be real mad at me for not knowing that. But it's a cool tank. But anyway, he got it. He was this history buff and a collector, and he would park it in front of his house. That's a house that no one's going to rob, by the way. No one's going to. Can you imagine him coming home? Honey, I parked the new gun in front. I'm sorry, you what? You parked the gun? Yes, I parked the gun in the front of the house. So just so you know. Yeah, no one's going to rob that house. That guy's got a tank. Can you imagine what he keeps, by his bedside for when anything goes bump in the night? So long story short, I'm unpacking stuff in my living room because legit had just moved to Texas. And I look out and I'm like, well, I'll be damned. There's a tank in my cul-de-sac. That's not a sentence I actually ever thought I would say. And I love the fact that I could say it. I'm like, well, God bless Texas. And I'm just, and I went out and said hi. And that's because that's how neighbors meet neighbors. It's amazing. So yes, you can all, you can own all those things. But the thing that he kind of glossed over, why does, so I'm of two minds. Either he's so unaware, he doesn't realize what he's saying, one, or he just is doesn't care because he thinks he's untouchable. He's like, yeah, my son owns a shotgun. Your son shouldn't be owning any guns. He lied on a 4473 when he was snorting coke off hookers' backsides and driving a rental car high as a kite on opioids and heaven knows what else, along with his brother's, his late brother's AG state tag, ID tag that he left in the front seat of the car that had to be retrieved by Secret Service. So, and his lover, which was his late brother's, his brother's widow, took his gun and disposed of it in an outdoor trash can literally across the street from a school. So depending on, you know, how many feet it was, may or may not have been a felony, but it's also a felony for him to have lied on his 4473. So maybe something that Joe Biden doesn't want to bring up and remind everyone over, right? I mean, if you, if FFLs, federal firearms licensees, if they screw up, like if they accidentally put the comma in the wrong spot on their application, then the ATF comes in. They're so excited to just like raid someone. It's been a long time since Waco for them. So they've, you know, they're really excited. I mean, we just, you know, so, oh yes, I did say that. Get mad. I don't even care. I just don't even care. Don't sit here and be like, they're just doing their jobs, because I could sit here and apply that to a number of other people who actually carried out some pretty unconstitutional stuff, whether or not it was in the United States or some pretty heinous stuff elsewhere. So let's just not go down that road, shall we? But the notion that they could be penalized so much more, and then you've got Hunter Biden, crackhead. Sidebar, one more time. Sorry. It was the crack in the coke, right? Is there a difference? I don't, I'm not up on my drugs. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, is it crackhead, cokehead? What should I use? Crackhead's funnier. Crackhead's funnier. Okay, all right, back to the show. I feel like I want to be accurate when I talk to my friends. So, you know, he's, you know, Hunter Biden, crackhead. He just gets a complete pass, total pass on all of this. But yet here's Joe Biden. Well, you shouldn't be able to, oh my gosh. They are still talking about this. Who is it that, where, oh man, I don't have this open. Nickel, I'm not going to say his name right. Give me a moment because there's a lot of vowels in it. Nicholas, okay, so, no, it's easy. Nicholas Vonnegut. He is with Daily Caller and the MRC and all that. He does the job of watching The View, so none of us have to. And he has all these sound bites, which I'm not going to play, but I'm just letting you know how they're still talking about it. You have all these people who have no idea anything about firearms. I had a discussion with Whoopi Goldberg when I guest hosted The View. And she was trying to say, well, I'm a Second Amendment supporter. The funniest thing ever, and that's when Barbara Walters was still alive. And I was sitting next to Jenny McCarthy, who, I don't care what you think of Jenny McCarthy, she was one of the nicest people I have ever met. I don't care. I will slap you. She is one of the nicest people I've ever met. She was the only one, because like Barbara Walters wanted to like let everybody know she did not like me. And I was sitting at the desk and I was right next to Jenny McCarthy, and they're showing a video on the screen behind me. I'm like, I'm shooting all kinds of rifles, right? Like full auto, everything else, semi-auto. I don't even remember everything I was shooting. They had like this montage, and Barbara Walters is sitting there. She's like, so you enjoy shooting guns? And I just kind of gestured up at the screen and I'm like, well, yeah. I'm like, what do you say to that? And Jenny McCarthy just kind of, you know, like squeezed my hand underneath the table. Like it's, you know, I know, I get it too. I get it. Anyway, so that all these women over at The View, they don't have anyone talented there anymore. Although, I mean, I don't dislike Whoopi to a crazy degree. I think she's wrong on so many things. And I think her hyperbole is crazy. But I think there's still some humanity there aside from all of the partisan politics. But see, I've met her and I've talked to her, where I can see why other people wouldn't have that opinion if they hadn't. But you had some of these other chicks on the show. They have no clue what they're talking about. If you can kind of pass yourself off as a Republican, and so, or if you can, you can at least identify what a rifle is from a handgun, and then that's like the extent of your knowledge on firearms, then please, by all means, come to The View and talk about it. Yay. And there's, I don't even know if I want to get into it, because I don't want to, we'll come back to it, because I will completely hijack the entire rest of this first hour. And they're in the comments in Slack, our little Slack room, going, it's cut two, Dana, it's cut two, play it. I just, we'll come back to it because I'm just going to do that for the rest of the hour. All right. So a few other things. I want to talk also about some of the media aspects of this. You have, which you should, if you are not a subscriber, because I haven't had, normally I put at least, you know, a few things, but I put some things behind firewalls this week, but I thought this week it was really important to get some of this coverage out. So it's my prep has been behind the paywall, and then I have some stuff for our other paid subscribers as well. But I had a piece up getting into how the Alphabet activists really do not want the Nashville terrorists manifesto release. Now, I realize that the FBI is not investigating this as terrorists. They save that special distinction for parents who speak out at school board meetings. But when it comes to a militant trans activist who openly hated Christians and who targeted a church and its accompanying Christian school to go out because she didn't feel affirmed enough, then, you know, I realize that's not really terrorism, right? So I have on, you know what I had this thing. It's the Alphabet activist groups. They don't want the Nashville terrorist manifesto released. So the manifesto, as you remember, the Nashville police chief discussing, they have it. They said, though, that they're not going to release it during the ongoing investigation. They, you know, because the investigation's still open. It's still ongoing. And so they don't want to release it. But the Alphabet people. The Alphabet people, though. You guys remember this song? This is the theme song for forever. The Alphabet activists, they don't want the Nashville Terrorist Manifesto released because they want to keep the focus on guns and bad Christians. This is per Newsweek last night. The police chief John Drake said that, you know, the killer identified as transgender, et cetera, et cetera. But they also said that, yes, it's an ongoing investigation, so they're not going to release it. Jordan Budd, who is the executive director of Children of Lesbians and Gays Everywhere, COLLAGE is the short. Everybody's got to have an acronym. Is your group really a group unless you have a cool acronym? They said that, no, it should not be published. The focus should be on how this is able to happen in the first place. Should not be such easy access to deadly weaponry. You know what? I'm just wondering if the manifesto reads like their regular everyday words, which all sound like a call to arms. Yeah. I mean, they in their day of purge, their rage day, or what is it? The great purge coming up on the, I don't know. What is it called? The day of vengeance? They use the word genocide in it. They're saying stop genocide, because if you don't affirm their, if you don't validate their self-perception, they think that's the same thing as genocide. And that's the language that they use. And this isn't unique. This is not the exception. It's the general rule when dealing with, I mean, I feel I haven't seen any trans activism that isn't militant. Now, there are some people who are on social media who identify as trans, and they're not nuts like these people. But I think they're the only people. They're literally, I think, the only ones. Because everything that I've seen, it's just so incredibly hostile. And we're going to talk more about this because I don't think that the Nashville police are messing around. And look how quickly they released the body cam footage. Look how fast they immediately got names of stuff out there. They were on it. They are legit gold standard guys. They really are. And if only everybody could be like Nashville PD for real. But I really don't, that's why I don't really think they're messing around with this. Once the investigation, I would imagine there's certain things that they are still running down that are in the manifesto pertinent to this investigation that they don't want compromised. Which is completely understandable. I mean, you know, it's just happened. So I just don't think they're going to mess around. I think they will release it. I really do. I don't think that they're going to cave to these demands. I don't think that they're going to listen to the Alphabet people. We're going to talk a little bit more about this coming up because apparently the parents also knew that she was, I mean, she lived with them, 28 years old. She lived with her parents. Her parents told police that they were concerned that she even owned guns, which indicates that they knew there was some sort of potential for violence there. So what came of that? Why did they do anything about it? If you're a bacon lover, today is your day. So whether alongside your eggs for breakfast, on a BLT, or wrapped around a filet, bacon is free for a year at Good Ranchers. Subscribe to get 24 ounces of Applewood smoked bacon added to each delicious box for a year. That's over $200 worth of bacon free. This is 100% American, high-quality bacon sourced from local farms with no added hormones or antibiotics. To subscribe, simply find your perfect box in the Good Ranchers curated selection of pasture-raised meat and wild-caught seafood. Select the frequency that works best for you, and then enjoy fewer trips to the meat aisle and more flavor at dinner. As long as you stay subscribed, your price will never increase. That's the Good Ranchers price lock guarantee. Subscribe today at goodranchers.com for free bacon in every box for a year. Use code Dana to get an additional $20 off your first order. Get the best meat America has to offer. Visit goodranchers.com. That's goodranchers.com, code Dana. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I wanted to bring up this story with the AI because it's Elon Musk, and I remember how to pronounce his name, but it's just a little difficult. Elon Musk and all of these other people who are software engineers, it's such Steve Wozniak. He was the guy who was first involved in Apple. Like a thousand of them. They all signed this letter saying that there are serious potential risks to society and civilization from human competitive AI systems. They're asking for a six-month moratorium on the development, they said, of these systems, that anything beyond the ChatGPT-4, they said, is it can be supremely dangerous. So they're asking for a pause on this. The whole thing freaks me out. Did you see the story too of the Roomba that was taking pictures of people? It took a picture of a woman on a toilet and like sent it back to HQ. Yeah, that actually happened. UK raised the terror threat in Northern Ireland to severe ahead of Joe Biden's visit. He's going to be visiting Northern Ireland, and so that's, yeah, they raised it to, I mean, that's kind of sad if that's what they had to do. Also, Rand Paul's staffer, who was stabbed multiple times in broad daylight, his condition was considered life-threatening, but it is improving now. The senator released a statement on that. We'll have more on that coming up. Stick with us. As colleges and universities across the country hold their graduations, I'd like to highlight a place where students receive the best classical liberal arts education in America. And when these students graduate, they've studied the great books, the history of Western civilization and of America, and the meaning and history of the Constitution. Can you guess who I'm talking about? I'm talking about Hillsdale College. Hillsdale was founded in 1844 to offer the kind of education needed to preserve civil and religious liberty, and holds true to that mission while refusing to accept one penny of taxpayer funding, not even indirectly, in the form of student grants and loans. Hillsdale students also abide by an honor code, which ensures a unity of purpose and fosters lively, civil, and intelligent debate. See for yourself and learn from Hillsdale for free through their influential Speech Digest in Primus, and by taking online courses on American history, the Constitution, and other subjects. Find out more at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4hillsdale.com. Join the battle over education for our country's future today.
How much attention should you be giving the Hunter Biden investigation? Although it's not illegal, both sides of the aisle have been engaging in influence peddling for decades. The voters are ultimately responsible for electing these corrupt politicians. What can you as the voter do? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
Trans people are already more likely to experience violence simply because they are trans people. So the right focusing on that is uniquely dangerous. And we have to respond to that. But it is also a distraction because there are plenty of trans people in plenty of countries all over the world. But once again, America is the only nation where shootings like this happen over and over again. So maybe it's not mental health or video games or
homework. Ali Velshi. You know what the issue is? And I made this point on Jesse Waters' program last night. Welcome back. Your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash here. We have always had guns in this country. I mean, that kind of goes without saying. This republic was founded with weapons of war. And we've always had guns as a part of our culture. Firearms are owning firearms are an American pastime. We did not have mass shootings like this throughout history. I mean, this is a recent development. And you know what else is a recent development? The entire breakdown of the family, the breakdown of respect for life, the breakdown of law and order, the breakdown of a morally based ethical society, the breakdown of faith-based beliefs, a breakdown of respect, a breakdown overall of American society. That has changed. But see, no one wants to acknowledge that. They want to focus on the instrument. And notice how, in fact, there was this, I can't remember what publication it was. I had noted it in one of the pieces that I had written. There were, it was either Reuters or AP or some wire service, but they were saying, oh, you know, not until since, you know, like 2000, I can't remember what date they had given, like, 2002 or something like that. You know, have we seen, you know, XYZ? They were very it was interesting in how they were describing, you know, how far back they were looking at, you know, mass shootings, and they were talking about the casualty count, because before then, you really did not, there wasn't that, it didn't, it wasn't like that. And in fact, before then, any kind of mass casualty incident at that point had been used with handguns. I mean, Virginia Tech remains one of the deadliest, and that was done with two Glocks. We've always had firearms. The thing that's changed is the hearts and spirits of the people. That's the variable. That's the element that is different. So blaming the gun is giving evil a pass. And I just disqualify anyone from debate on this conversation when they do that. Because you are literally giving evil a pass. You're running cover for evil by just blaming the gun, which we've always had in this country, but we haven't always had this intent on evil. And so for Ali Velshi to sit here, and I know him, he's over at, is he at MSNBC now? Was he at CNN at one point? I think I knew him when he was at CNN. I don't remember when he changed, but for him to, they don't want to, oh no, we can't talk about the trans identity. That's off limits. I saw that the Metro Nashville PD had tweeted just a little bit ago that as far as the Covenant investigation, they don't have any news conferences planned for today. Any additional information will be released in written form. I mean, the terrorist manifesto and the terrorist grievances against the school are important because it gives insight into why they did what they did. And if people are serious about preventing further loss of life or preventing other Christian schools or churches from being targeted, then I think that's important to understand that information. When I hear Alphabet groups say things like, well, it's going to, you know, nothing good comes from releasing that manifesto. That sounds like a threat. It sounds like you're threatening people. And in fact, I think you are. This notion that, well, we can't talk about it. We can't discuss it. Why? You want to cover it up or more people will be killed? I mean, again, that sounds threatening. Because I think they're worried that the language in the manifesto is going to echo all of these militant trans activists' everyday speech. It probably reads like a call to arms. I wouldn't be surprised. This has everything to do with, this is the part of the motive. All of these stories coming out. I don't know if you've seen some of it. Like, for instance, quote, Nashville mass school shooter was rejected by her Christian parents who couldn't accept that she was gay and trans. Because the parents refused to entertain her self-perception, that somehow contributed to this? They want to keep the focus on the instrument, not the instability of the terrorist. This woman was under doctor's care for mental health issues. Her parents told police that they were concerned that she owned guns and thought she had sold her firearms, indicating that they knew that there was some sort of potential for violence there. So how could they not? She lived with them. She was 28 years old and lived at home. She sent messages to her friends the day before saying that something bad was going to happen and that she was going to die, that it was all planned. And then this is how they tried to rationalize it. And that's, like, for instance, they have this story. The Associated Press tweeted this last night. Quote, the head of the Christian elementary school in Nashville, who was killed in the shooting there, was described by friends as a smart, loving, and rare female leader within a male-led religious culture. Did you catch that last part? A rare female leader. So they're purposefully now, they're also downplaying the importance of women in Christianity. I just have to interject with this. I mean, I guess the stories of Mary, tell me you've never read the Bible without telling me you've never read the Bible. And you have the stories of Miriam, you have the stories of Phoebe, you have the stories of Ruth, Deborah, Esther, Mary, all these other women in the Bible, to say nothing of how when Jesus first appeared outside the tomb, he appeared to a woman and elevated women to be equal to men by appearing to Mary Magdalene first and entrusting her to deliver his message to all the apostles. I mean, hi. In a time when women were not to be believed, hi, Jesus was the actual, you know where, you know who elevated women? Christians. Do you know who elevated women to the level of equality that third wave feminists try to undermine today with this trans stuff? Jesus. If they can convince women that they're unvalued, they can drive a wedge between men and women, but between women and God. And the AP invokes this falsehood in this headline because they beg the question that this terrorist suppression within the faith of their school contributed to her evil act. Anything that they can do to run defense. You know, I saw the headline. It said that the Nashville or the Trans Day of Vengeance is still going on. The organizers are still going to have it. You want to hear an interesting story? It was at one of the Second Amendment groups that I, for a period, I was contracted to be spokesperson for. And it was at one of the big annual meetings that they had. And I was trying to remember if it was in Kentucky or Georgia, but they're outside. They had one of the, because I know a lot of Parkland parents, and I've actually become very dear friends with many of them. One of them, though, his son was one of those who were killed by this murderer in Parkland. Absolutely hates me and hates all of you. Made this huge mural where he had then President Trump, and then it was this huge mural. It was part of their gun control protest. Other anti-Second Amendment protests, and he painted me with blood dripping down my mouth, holding a gun, and, you know, all of this stuff. And he was very, the Oliver family, just very, and he said, like, horrible things about me online. And I've never said anything to him. I've never acknowledged him. I don't think that the way that you solve problems is to hurt more people, but, you know, some people, I think him, take a different view of that. But said all the huge life-size mural. Well, when I went to State of the Union, and I didn't tell you guys this, guess who had been invited to sit literally like five seats away from me? That dad. And he walked in and was belligerent and like very rude to all of the security guards out there. I was sitting behind a veteran who was in uniform, decorated. And after POTUS, after Biden was finished speaking, you know, it takes him forever to walk away from his lectern and get around all of the these partitions and all of that, and then get up to the aisle to exit. And you have Secret Service and all that around him. And he was, you know, talking to senior members of Democratic leadership and all this. It takes him a little while to leave. Now, I've never been to a State of the Union, but I've been to enough events where I know that you're not going to get up. When your main principal is somebody like POTUS, you're not going anywhere until POTUS leaves the room. That's just the way it is, because Secret Service want to make sure everything is contained. Doesn't matter if they're Republican or Democrat, that's standard operating procedure. So I stood up, because it was a couple hours. I stood up and stretched my legs, and the veteran in front of me stood up, stretched his legs, shook his hand, you know, thanked him for his service. And he was like, yeah, I didn't think I was going to be able to sit through that. I thought, woo. But, you know, there were people, and I noticed that's when, you know, the dad was with this group of people, and he was just, why can't we leave? Why can't we leave? And just, they were all like really belligerent and, you know, raising a fuss to the point where other people in the gallery were looking. And you know, I made the remark. I'm like, look, you know, as long as POTUS is there, nobody's going anywhere. I don't care who you are. You're not going anywhere. Let's just chill. I mean, there's, you know, they're going to let you leave. Just calm down. Oh my gosh. They wouldn't sit down. They were, you know, there was raised voices at security. And I just was just, and like, you know, I have to go. I'm important. That kind of attitude. It was really wild. So after seeing that, I just got the impression that, you know, some people I think have chips on their shoulders and things happen that make it even worse. And they hate the world. And that's just kind of how it is. But yeah, I didn't tell you guys that. But it was very, he was one of the guys who got arrested and put to the floor in the halls of Congress because I guess he was there meeting with different lawmakers. And they had him on the ground and his wife was there and they were acting like it was a big deal. After seeing how belligerent this guy was in the gallery, I'm not surprised. I mean, you can't sit here and cause a scene and provoke security there to the point where they might detain you and then say that you're the one who's being victimized. It's, you know, and create a scene unnecessarily. But I thought, I actually thought if this guy keeps doing this, this veteran doesn't know who he is. And he was pretty high ranked. And I'm like, this gentleman doesn't know who this guy is. And this gentleman is not going to care. He's going to get in here and help security if this keeps increasing in terms of the agitation. It was something else. But, you know, I bring this up because, you know, even since then, since Parkland, there hasn't been any serious, you know, any discussion about school resource officers, et cetera, none of that. And no one, and then with this Trans Day of Vengeance, I'm just, you know, people were really mad when, you know, they would have, you know, pro Second Amendment groups would have their annual meetings, but I guess the media is really quiet about this. They're going to go ahead and have this. Guess they're going to go ahead and just have this meeting. You know, the other thing too that I wanted to bring up, is in my newsletter, the press secretary for Katie Hobbs. Have you guys seen this? So Katie Hobbs' press secretary published a GIF of someone drawn two pistols and had put it out, like she drew guns and it says, "Us when we see transphobes." Jocelyn Berry is the press, was apparently, this just now came in about 5 minutes ago. Jocelyn Berry, the press secretary for Arizona Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs, has just resigned because yesterday, actually the day of the shooting, she posted this GIF of a woman drawing two guns on people and she captioned it, "Us when we see transphobes." So the press secretary for Katie Hobbs was promoting violence and the media didn't say anything. How many times has the media been all over Christina Pashaw, oh, yeah, Ron DeSantis' press secretary? So they've been pretty quiet about this. So Katie Hobbs' press secretary just resigned. That literally just happened. Interesting. Americans have had it. They're done supporting companies that rake in hundreds of millions, sometimes billions of dollars, while trashing the country that made their success possible. Until recently, we had to take it. But companies like Patriot Mobile are building a whole new economy, one which embraces the values that made America the greatest country on earth. Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offers dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks. Plus, they offer a coverage guarantee. If you're not happy with your coverage, you can switch to a different network for free without changing carriers. With Patriot Mobile, their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Just visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them right now at 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today using offer code Dana. We should stand together and support companies that share our values. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
Of all your favorite talk hosts, one of these is not like the others. The Dana Show.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
So one of my favorite episodes of the days of these United States is the president of the United States not knowing what's going on anytime ever. And I don't even know what this is supposed to mean. What is this? This is, he sent some flowers to someone's wife, and then I think we're missing. I think there was like a deleted scene from this that like messed up the continuity. Go ahead and play this. This is five.
We're also committed to this state. You're here on your wedding anniversary, and I just want you to know I sent flowers to your wife. I don't know about you. You better damn well be in time for that dinner. Mm. He has dinner later tonight. I'm not going to tell you the time because you may want to go to the same restaurant. But the fact is that I promise I'm not going to speak till 6:30. That's when the dinner is.
That's pretty amazing.
He's running things
now in their marriage. He's running things. He can run their marriage, but I don't know that he was. Good heavens. I also love my other favorite episode this week of these days of the United States has to do with all the cast members being upset over digital blackface. By the way, have you heard about this? You guys know what digital blackface is? You know what it is, Kane? It's when you're... So, digital blackface is if you're sharing either a video or a GIF of someone's reaction because you think that reaction completely just absolutely encapsulates what you're feeling at the moment. But if they're black, then it is apparently a new form of contemporary racism called digital blackface. Oh, really? And the premise of digital blackface is that apparently black people and white people don't have the same facial expressions. I mean, I don't know what else is there is to explain it. So... I don't know, but that's the other episode of these days. They're getting pretty avant-garde with their content on these days. The United States, yeah, digital blackface. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there? I don't know. I'm made of questions. I think we're gonna have to come back to this. So coming up in our second hour, the debt ceiling. Apparently, Biden's like, we'll just raise it to $4 trillion. No big deal. We've got some foreign policy for you as well to get into. And, of course, you know, wokery and energy, there's a lot to hit. Stay with us. More in store. Second hour. Black Rifle Coffee Company set out on a mission to make the best cup of coffee that's ever hit your mug. And I think they've hit that mission straight on. Their dream has been to sell enough premium coffee to build a support network for veterans, first responders, and law enforcement. And thanks to your support, that dream has come true. Black Rifle Coffee is roasted by a veteran-led team of brilliant coffee graders who work tirelessly to roast and bag the highest quality coffee here in America. And the coffee is truly one of a kind and my favorite. Your support has helped Black Rifle Coffee Company expand their team of active duty service members, veterans, and veteran family members. And they were able to donate over 120,000 bags of coffee to veterans and first responders in 2022. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana and use my code Dana at checkout for 20% off your purchase and your first coffee club order. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. Use code Dana and also look for Black Rifle Coffee in grocery and convenience stores. Black Rifle Coffee, America's coffee.
Good morning.
Is there a crisis at our southern border?
Senator, there is a very significant...
That's a yes or no question.
There's a very significant...
Is there a crisis?
Senator, there's a very significant challenge...
I think your microphone is not on.
There is a very significant challenge that we are facing.
Yes or no, is there a crisis?
I believe I've addressed that question.
So you're refusing to answer?
Senator, there is a very significant challenge and...
Will you answer if there's a crisis?
Therefore, we are dedicating the resources...
Okay, so you're refusing to answer. Well, Secretary Mayorkas, I'll tell you someone who is willing to answer, which is your and President Biden's chief of the Border Patrol in a sworn deposition in July of 2022 when asked, would you agree, Chief Ortiz, that the southern border is currently in crisis? Answer, yes. Notice none of those wiggle words, none of that equivocation. One word, one syllable, yes. Are you willing to speak with the same clarity as Chief Ortiz? Is there a crisis at our southern border? Yes or no?
Senator, I'm very proud to work alongside.
So you refuse to answer. Let me.
The more I hear about Mayorkas, particularly as it relates to his demand to expedite processing at the southern border as head of DHS, I really don't like him. And doesn't he have this tiny tyrant kind of aesthetic?
Oh, yeah.
Welcome back to the program. Top of our second hour. Dana Loesch here with you. That was some of the hearing there. And you could hear Senator Ted Cruz questioning Mayorkas about all of this. Say, I mean, is it a crisis at the border? If you can't acknowledge it, then how are you going to deal with it? I mean, that's pretty basic. So, you know, Democrats are trying to wave this off as, oh, you're just, this is just for show. This is just semantics. It's not, though, because, I mean, words have meaning. And if you can't recognize that something seriously wrong is ongoing at the border, then how are you in the world going to even think about remedying it? I wanted to share this story with you. This comes by way of Reuters. And it says, 40 illegal entrants were left to burn to death behind bars at a Mexican detention center. Inmates had set mattresses on fire to protest deportations. So it was the moment that a bunch of guards at a Mexican detention center, there were 40 people who I guess had entered illegally. A Mexican journalist had shared it. Joaquin Doriga, who described the situation as criminal. It broke out about 9:30 p.m. Monday. And it was caused by an inmate protest over deportations. The National Migration Institute of Mexico said that there were 40 illegal aliens that had entered Mexico illegally from Central and South America. So, kind of sidebar, why aren't people attacking Mexico for their immigration policies? See, people only go after the United States. They said that there were 40 who died in the blaze, 28 were hospitalized. Guatemalan and Honduran authorities counted 41 deaths between them. Guatemala's National Migration Institute said 28 of their citizens were killed by fire. The deputy foreign minister of Honduras said 13 were from his country. So they're back and forth with the tolls. Now, the totals. Mexican President Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador had said that authorities believed the blaze in the city opposite, right? I mean, it's Juarez. It's like right on the other side of El Paso. They said that it was because they had inmates there who were protesting the deportations because they found out that they were going to be deported, right? And then they were protesting that. And so they set a fire to all these mattresses. And apparently Mexico's president was trying to blame the United States for this somehow. I'm not quite sure how that's possible, but that's ultimately what's happened. They were saying that, though, there's a buildup of these people in borders. Now, I can understand if they're saying, oh, it's because they're trying to enter Mexico illegally so that they can further go on to the United States illegally. Well, yeah, then then you can lay the blame at the feet of the United States, because whose policies are those that are motivating people to come and do this? Joe Biden's. The complete and total open border. There is no border. I haven't spoken to a border agent, and I've been to a few events, you know, the past few months. Not a single one of them says that the border's closed. They're like, it's totally open. They don't even have enough. They have hardly any people to be able to actually police it properly. And there's been this buildup in these Mexican border cities because they're trying to process asylum requests. So they're using that. Let me go to this. They're using that CBP1. It's that government app that has been described by many as a concierge service. Is kind of what it is. It's the Biden-backed Customs and Border Protection app. The DHS under Mayorkas launched this component of it, allowing people who enter the country illegally to schedule appointments at the U.S.-Mexico border so that they can be released faster into American communities. And hundreds of people have signed up on this to schedule an appointment to get released into the U.S. interior. So it was the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing. That's how we started off this hour, where you heard Ted Cruz questioning Mayorkas about whether or not they would even describe the border as being, you know, as a crisis. And this service, concierge service, as it's being called, it's not even really working. Josh Hawley called it akin to Ticketmaster. He said, quote, it's a concierge service for illegal immigrants rather than building a wall. You've built a Ticketmaster for illegal immigrants. Now, Mayorkas was, he angrily refuted that. He said that's a complete mischaracterization of the program. But then he didn't actually explain what was being mischaracterized. You go on the phone, you get the app, you reserve your time to come to the border, then you use the concierge service. And then when they go to the cert, when they come to the appointment, no one asks questions. There's no interviews given. They're just released into the country. In January, 10,000 foreign nationals who scheduled the appointment through the CBP One app were released into the interior. In February, guess how many? Over 20,000. Since the implementation of the program, there's been more than 40,000 who've scheduled an appointment. It's something else. Audio soundbite 17. Ted Cruz was continuing to hammer Mayorkas on this because, again, Mayorkas, he was the one who expedited the release of children, which we had that New York Times story that blasted Mayorkas for essentially creating a new child labor market. Listen to this exchange, though, as Cruz continued with his time.
I've been on the Rio Grande and I've seen dead bodies floating there who've drowned because of your refusal to do your job. You don't even know how many have died. What do you say to the Texas farmers and ranchers who find pregnant ladies dead on their property, who find toddlers dead on their property? What do you say to them?
I say that is why precisely we are taking it to the smuggling organizations.
But you are not. Number, that is simply not true. Number,
what? How is he taking it to smuggling organizations? They've done nothing, literally nothing. No, he created an app, guys. And then meanwhile, it's just advertising and incentivizing all of these other people to enter illegally. Mexican border cities, they have such a buildup of detainees that they can't even hold it. But this is all, you know, if you wanted to completely just destroy the border, this is exactly what you would do. Exactly what you would do with it. It is really something else. So a couple of other stories here I want to make sure that we get into. We've been, pull this up, because I was going to get to some of this earlier this week, but we've had quite a lot going on. We've had this, I wanted to get to this part. It was a Wall Street Journal poll, and they were saying that Americans placed more importance now on money than patriotism, faith, and children. Good heavens. Well, it was a USA Today poll, and this is on the heels of the Wall Street Journal poll that talked about the lack of, or rather death of, spirituality, really, or faith in America. Americans, according to this USA Today poll, place far less importance on traditional values like patriotism, religious faith, and having kids than they did 25 years ago. Only 38% say patriotism is important, compared to 70% in 1998. The proportion who think religion is important has fallen from 62% to 39%. Having children being measured as very important to only 30% of people, compared to 59% in the 1998 survey. Instead, Americans now say money is a top priority. That's placed above the values that even shaped the country. And then it's a staggering, staggering, staggering change. It's basically, you know, a single generation of change, maybe two. And this is, I think, part of the culture, the victimhood mentality. It's all part of that. They said that also they think that coronavirus and the lowest economic confidence in decades is having an effect on all of this. So there was a USA Today poll. The other one was the Wall Street Journal poll that was done in coordination with the University of Chicago. And it ultimately points to the nation being down about everything, but particularly religious faith, values, etc. Very interesting. And so I think it's even further divisive. When you look at 15% of Americans think America has gone, of Democrats think America has gone too, has gone too far in the whole promoting transgenderism, etc. For Republicans, that figure 75%. More than half of Republicans, over 55%, think schools have gone too far with their steps to promote quote unquote racial diversity, which isn't really even racial diversity if you think about it, compared to 6% of Democrats. There is a serious difference here. It is so, has it ever been so polarized? I know that's the question. And how do you get back? We have more on the way, including coming up. I have this crazy story. I just find this case fascinating. Every now and then you get these stories that are just kind of snapshots of American culture. And one of these is the story of this sister who's suing her brother for a huge slice of their family fortune, even though she didn't work and he did. He was the one who like quadrupled the company's value. I thought it was, man, what a snapshot of just American society. We're going to get into that. Also, coming up later on, Vivek Ramaswamy is going to be joining us in my third hour.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I need to send this headline to my husband because he's always wanted to eat a woolly mammoth. So an Australian company is unveiling a lab-grown meatball. Sorry. Made from woolly mammoth. I will say this is something that you can trust that Good Ranchers is not going to put in there. It's going to be weird tasting. It's a lab-grown meat. That's nasty. Lab-grown meat. It's an Australian synthetic meat producer called Vow. Ow. They unveiled a meatball made from the genetic material of the woolly mammoth. This sounds so disgusting. The meatball was created using proteins. So I thought it was going to be like, we took something from a mammoth and we grew it in a bit. I mean, that would have been more appetizing than synthetic meat. Sidebar. Really good, total 80s hairband, metal hairband, like tribute. Cover band. Yeah. Synthetic meat. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I might take it out further here on break. The meatball was created, blah, 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 proteins. They unveiled it at a science museum in Amsterdam. They said it was easy and fast to do it. Just a couple of weeks. They wanted to create a chicken tendy, a little chicken nugget out of meat from the dodo bird. But the necessary DNA sequences do not exist. Thank heavens. No one has tasted it. It's probably likely that no one will. They said they haven't seen this protein for thousands of years. They have no idea how our immune system would react when we eat it. I mean, I bet it would do less damage than the quote-unquote vaccine. Anyway, they said that they wanted to try to make it more palatable. So we'll see. I don't know. Let's see. Two groups apparently had submitted bids, $6 billion bids for the Commanders. One of Magic Johnson's groups submitted a fully financed bid for the Washington Commanders that meets Dan Snyder's $6 billion asking price. And then a Canadian also did. Some Canadian did, too. That's all I care about. Let's see. Moving on. Japan's population is apparently going to fall by a third because they're aging so fast. And they did not have a lot of kids when they needed to. The Japanese demographics is often cited in secular stagnation stories. And it's getting bad. I mean, I don't know if it's going to fall that far, but it's a very unusual country demographically. 50% greater landmass than the UK, but like not as many people. It's weird. All right, stick with us. We got more in store back after this.
Politics, pop culture, and whatever else gets canceled, tossed in a blender, paid for by sponsored hate mail. It's The Dana Show.
It all started with the first day of spring. I am at Kate Spade, New York to find the perfect spring outfit. Let's go! Kate Spade, New York is a staple in my wardrobe. And I think I absolutely need to have this as my spring bag. The mini bags are in. They're in. Let's go. You know I love pink, and I think the bag will go great with this. Let's try her on. You can always use another pair of heels, right? Here's the full fit check. I love a puffy sleeve, and I added some jewelry because more is always more. And honestly, I think I'm gonna wear this out of the store. So happy spring. I love ya. I love you, Kate Spade, New York.
So that's, I'm made of opinions right now. So that's Dylan Mulvaney, who is the, I guess, new face of Kate Spade, whatever that means. Kate Spade is just the brand now, because the actual Kate Spade, who is, interestingly, David Spade's sister-in-law, and I love David Spade. She killed herself with her own scarf, hung herself with her own scarf like a few years ago. But that's some controversy. created by the brand Kate Spade, which was sold off, I believe, when they hired the dude, Dylan Mulvaney, who wants to be a woman and went and had facial reconstruction surgery to look more like a chick and all this stuff. So he is now partnering with the Kate Spade women's wear brand, and they've released new videos promoting their spring 2023 collection in partnership with Dylan Mulvaney, who's described as a TikTok influencer. And he's been apparently a longtime partner of Kate Spade and promoted their products for a year. And look, the only, maybe he has, but the only reason that I've never noticed is because I don't like Kate Spade. I'm going to have some really unpopular opinions here, possibly, like on that. It may trigger you more than anything I ever say about Dylan Mulvaney. Sidebar. Whenever I hear him talk, I feel like he's mocking women. It sounds like he's doing a gross characterization of what he thinks women sound like, and it comes off as like mocking women. I don't get all of this brand partnership. I've been a woman for, you know, all my life, Kane, and I don't have any clothing partnerships. I don't know anybody who would partner with me, though, because I consider gray to be color. I constantly have Juan like trying to encourage me not to wear black all the time, but then I just don't know what to do. I'm like, because Juan's like, you're killing my color scheme. Stop it. But I don't know what to do. Like, I'm wearing a black t-shirt, but it's different because the gold buttons. So see, different. So I don't know who would work with me aside from maybe like Rick Owens, but I think he's a Satanist, so I don't think that counts. Anyway, so I cannot stand Kate Spade for the same reason I can't stand Lily Pulitzer. I do not like adult female toddler Easter Sunday wear. I don't have that aesthetic. I just, I'm not like a tie a scarf on the handbag type of girl, right? I'm just, I mean, if you are, that's great. You probably hate what I like, and I am totally fine with that. It makes the world fun, sometimes makes it spin faster, so that's okay. It means we'll all die sooner. But I'm just not into the whole. So I was kind of internally, the conversation that I was having was this. Oh, it makes sense that Dylan Mulvaney is doing a partnership with, you know, Kate Spade, because I feel like he infantilizes himself. He dressed up as like a doll in one of the things. I don't get on TikTok because I don't like commies. And also I cannot subject myself to people day in and day out telling me about their lives because I don't care. But oh my gosh, like I just do not get the whole, like, and we were broke when I was growing up. So my mom could not actually afford Kate Spade. And I don't even know if Lily Pulitzer, which I only learned like this year, was a Palm Beach staple. If she couldn't afford it. So it was ever like, you know, the best that Walmart and JCPenney had to offer, which was great. I don't know how to describe it. It's like grandma's tea room threw up on you, right? Like, why? If doilies and grandma's floral couch and Chanel number 5 and what else? Headbands with pearls on it came together and had a baby, it would be one of those two brands, if not both, right? Yeah. So it's, I don't know. I just... One of my friends was telling me it's 80s Laura Ashley revived. I don't even know what that means. Who's that? Who is that even? I don't know. Is that Grandma Chic? I don't know who that is. So anyway, former goth kid. I don't know. So why is he? I guess Kate Spade just doesn't want to make money. That's okay. I mean, I think only dudes who are cosplaying as women are going to wear this ridiculous crap anyway, because who wants to dress like a toddler going to church on Sunday all the time? An Easter Sunday of all days. All he's missing is his Bo Peep hat. It's true. Golly. I don't know. So what's next? Are they going to have Playtex hire him? Playtex tampons? Are they going to hire Dylan Mulvaney next to sit here and tell women about the... You okay? For real, when does it end? Tell us all about pads, Dylan. I mean, for real, when does it end?
Come on.
I mean, I can keep going down that road.
That's okay.
Oh my gosh. I mean, I don't know. He's a parody of what a woman is.
Right, because I don't know any women that act like that. Do you know of any women that act like that?
No, as a woman, if I see a dude wearing chick stuff, you're not. That's not appealing to me. You know why? Because when women look at ads, they try to envision themselves, or they think it appeals to the best perception they have of themselves, that product. And that's what attracts them to that product. They like the design or they like the color. But then if it's on the model in the picture on the website or whatever, they see themselves. They try to find some commonality as a way to sort of mentally try it on. And that's part of the marketing of it. If I'm looking at a dude holding up a bag, my first thought is, what the hell do you got to carry a bag for? Are you carrying like a secondary, pistol and some blades and quick clot and all this stuff in there? Like, what do you got in your bag? Because if that or a computer, that's, otherwise, what do you have to carry in there? I also think women's bags, unless you got babies, I think women's bags are way too damn big. This is still political, people. It's way too big. What was it like in the early aughts? Everyone was using them as status symbols. I'm like, is your whole bathroom in your bag? Like, you don't need it. You don't need all that. But they couldn't find any actual women. You know what? That's the problem. Kate Spade couldn't find any actual women to promote their, hi, would you like to wear our toddler on Easter Sunday chic apparel and accessories? So this guy didn't know any better because he just became a woman. So, so to speak. He's playing as a woman, so he don't know no better. So that's the only thing, because it sucks. They couldn't find anyone else because their designs are crap. Oh my gosh, I can't stand it. I can't say, can I also say this? When I was in Florida recently, I saw someone in Lily Pulitzer. I thought it was a sofa with a head walking towards me. I didn't know what the hell I was looking at. I'm like, who willingly goes in here and is like, I want all of this on me at once. Who does that? I don't get it. It's like an East Coast thing too. And it is a big beltway thing. That's the other reason why I don't like beltway stuff. Their fashion is atrocious. They wear these like coral colors and like the I can't. Oh. Anyway, I saw this. I'm like, why? But this isn't the only company that's doing this. I was going to say, Kate Spade, this is the brand. Kate Spade committed suicide. Which, seems, I guess if you're going to go and partner with a brand and you're a dude cosplaying as a woman, you would partner with a brand where, it's sad. The owner committed suicide, but also 43% of men who are cosplaying as women commit suicide, too. So I don't know. Stay away from the scarves. I don't know what to. Oh, don't sit here and tell me that I'm being mean or making a mockery. I'm watching a dude, a guy with a penis, cosplay as a woman and brands partnering with him, ignoring all of the other women. So spare me your protestations. Moving on. I could stay on that for quite some time, but I'd have to look at the pictures of it more. And that bag was hideous. Let's be real. And it was white. It's not even after Labor Day or Memorial Day, for crying out loud. All right. So I know. Dana, you're so mean. Yes. Let's see here. This is a... Stop. Can I just note, I'm going to move to this analysis of how much the vaccines cost. Kane is, I'm taking my glasses on and off. My sinuses are bad today. It hurts to wear them on my nose bridge. How many juices did you come in with today?
I came in with three juices.
Who comes in? I wish you could, he's drinking a full juice an hour. They're all different colors. He comes in
every 90 minutes
with legit, like full size juices.
24 ounces.
What is that one? It looks like green sewage. What's that?
This one is a the digestive. This one is a positive digestive.
You need that juice? Because you've had two juices already.
Yeah, one's a liver cleanser, and the other one was a digestive.
A liver cleanser.
Yeah, it had beets and apples and celery in there. And this one has got cucumbers and green apple and little pineapple.
I think juice is a scam.
You think? Why would you think juice is a scam?
I think it's a scam.
Like they're just making up juice? what? Like they're just making up juice?
Yeah.
It's not real? Like,
let's just put all these green things in a thing. This helps your liver. That's what it does. It helps your liver. I think it's a scam that people use to get you to buy additional drinks because they ran out of ideas.
All right. So the true good feeling I get from it is just false.
Sugar.
It's a scam.
It's sugar.
It's not sugar. There's no sugar
in this. Yes, there's no sugar in
fruit.
There's
only fructose.
That's right.
There's only fructose.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
I think it's... I just had to point this out. He comes in. If you go and you
I tell him what you said to me on Monday because you were concerned about my poopies.
No, I was like,
why are you drinking all that juice?
We're gonna have to move the toilet.
You're gonna be pooping everywhere. That's what you said. You're gonna be pooping everywhere.
He comes in with like it. Do you tell people they're all for you? Because he has. Yes. They give him the. You do.
Yeah.
He gets the egg carton thing where you put all the drinks in there.
Yeah, it's just
and it's all for him. He comes in here and I could see it in the back of the studio. It's kind of dim back there, but I was looking like, I'll be damned. He's got two other juices. Now you only got one because this is your 1.5 already.
Yeah. And I've got one more before the end of the show. Like right at the end of the show, I'll drink that.
So it's one of those every 3 hours?
Every
hour for 90 3 hours?
Minutes, every 90 minutes to 2 hours, yeah.
So you were just driving by this place and you're like, oh.
I actually found them on DoorDash first before I knew where they were.
Now he's been stopping there every day. He comes in with all his juices.
Every other day. Every
like,
other day.
Juan's super healthy. I don't see Juan doing all them juices. Do you do juices, Juan?
Yeah. No, doesn't do juices.
Oh.
You don't do juices.
Oh.
He's a young kid. He'll get there. He didn't do probiotics before he met me either.
Oh, you know what? I have a headline about probiotics.
But he does them now.
Juan says he just does water. Juan's like the healthiest person we know.
That's right.
And he's also like very pure, so we protect him at all costs.
But it was nice of you to be concerned about my poopies.
Oh my gosh, I can't. I was just like, dude, your liver's gonna fall out of your ass if you keep drinking this much juice. Stop. It's just forgive my Portuguese, but I've never seen anyone drink as much juice as he has in my life.
It's good for you.
In my life. All right. So let's get back to I had to acknowledge it because I mean, how do you not? So a bombshell analysis found $147 billion in economic damage, tens of millions injured or disabled, 26.5 million people injured, 1.36 million disabled, 300,000 excess deaths. A research firm, Finance Technologies, is attributing this to the damage from the quote-unquote vaccine. Mm. Wow. That is pretty significant. Edward Dowd he runs Finance Technologies. He's a former BlackRock portfolio manager. And he, along with Yuri Nunes, PhD in physics and mathematics, Carlos Alegria in physics and finance, split the impact of the injections into four broad categories to estimate the human costs associated with the vaccine. And it was pretty amazing. They estimate the 2022 damage, 26.5 million injuries, 1.3 million disabilities, 300,000 excess deaths. The economic cost total almost $150 billion. Injuries, almost $90 billion. Disabilities, over $50 billion. Excess deaths, $5.6 billion. That's, I'm not actually surprised by this. Notice how all these countries are now dropping their requirements. Turks and Caicos Islands on April 1st are dropping their requirements to have all the injections.
Really?
Uh-huh. We're going to talk about all this coming up. We got to Florida Man on the way. And then later on, our guest in our third hour, Vivek Ramaswamy, he's running for president. He has no voting record. So I've got a million questions.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
Mm-mm-mm. All right. So first up here, I wanted to get to this yesterday. A Florida man sentenced after he tried to board a flight with a suitcase full of drugs. He's been sentenced to several years in federal prison. He was traveling on a plane with a suitcase full of drugs. His name is Rashid Wooten. He, 29 years old. He was sentenced for possession with intent to distribute fentanyl. And apparently he was going, I guess, from Florida to Tennessee, and they had a drug sniffing dog led authorities on a positive alert to the suitcase that belonged to Mr. Wooten. And they found tons of fentanyl, almost 1,000 grams of fentanyl, almost 5,000 grams of methamphetamine. He was taken into custody after he went to baggage claim about his lost luggage. So he's going to be in jail for quite some time. But my gosh, just to take it on a plane like that. I don't know. A man was arrested. Florida man was arrested after a standoff while drinking beer and falling asleep. Oh, man. This Florida man was arrested. He fell asleep while drinking beer inside of his vehicle during a standoff with Southwest Florida deputies. This was last week. James Allen Curry was arrested by Charlotte County deputies. They tried a felony traffic stop. He ignored all commands to show his hands and exit the vehicle. And then he came to a stop, drank a beer, fell asleep. I mean, that's one way to get caught, I guess. I don't know. Coming up, third hour on the way. And later on in that third hour, Vivek Ramaswamy joins us. He's running for president. Why? We'll talk.
Secretary, do you agree with the president that we should ban the private ownership of assault weapons in America?
Senator, I do.
What is an assault weapon?
It is, for example, an AK-47.
Can you give me a definition other than just pointing to a specific weapon? Would there be other weapons besides an AK-47 you would ban?
Very well are. And I remember when I was a federal prosecutor in the Central District of California from September 25th, 1989 to, I believe it was April 2001.
And I thank you for your service.
Of the,
but if
all
you could
of
answer
law enforcement,
my question.
The vast majority of law enforcement officers, leaders with whom I worked, were greatly in support of the assault weapons
Mr.
ban.
Chairman, you know why we get so frustrated with you? Because you won't give straight answers.
I think I just did.
No, you didn't. No, you didn't. Do you have a definition of an assault weapon?
I am confident there is a technical definition of what is an assault weapon, and it was assuredly used in the context of the statute that previously existed banning assault weapons.
So Alejandro Mayorkas has no clue. That was a pitiful answer. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Always good to be with you. So Alejandro Mayorkas couldn't actually, he's like, oh, AK-47s? First thing I think of? AK-47s? The only gun I know? AK? He sounds like one of those seagulls from Nemo. Okay, AK-47, mine. That's not the definition of it. It's a made-up term. And actually, the only time I've ever seen it used was in an Army field guide, but it was talking about full auto or select fire capability, meaning that you could flip the giggle switch and you could go to semi-auto means one squeeze, one pew, or you could go to three-round burst, which is one squeeze, three-round pew. So that's select fire capabilities. This old field guide. But no, it's a new term that was made up in the 90s because they were trying to get away from handguns because they realized no one was going to ban handguns. Welcome back to the program. Top of this third hour, Dana Lash with you. That was our friend, Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana. They're at the Senate Judiciary questioning Alejandro Mayorkas because this is what they've been going for. Now, here's some very interesting news that came out, by the way, a development from Nashville. Apparently, the police chief. So John Drake had said that, you know, the killer, the trans terrorist had been under doctor's care for emotional disorder. But that the parents, that they said that she should not own guns. They told police that she shouldn't own guns and they didn't believe that she had any. They thought she had purchased one and then sold it. And so clearly it, you know, you can tell that there's something there that gave the parents the idea that there could be a potential for violence, right? So she had purchased 7 firearms from 5 stores before the massacre. And there's a lot of stuff coming out that suggests she could have absolutely been prevented, which I agree with. Because if someone has been adjudicated, and this is a federal law, this is an 18 USC, I want to say 922G. So federal law states that if anyone who has been adjudicated to be, whether they are found to be a threat to themselves or a threat to other people, they can be rendered by a court of law as ineligible, meaning they are prohibited from purchasing or possessing. And it could have been the doctor and it could have been the parents who could have done this. And particularly in Tennessee, even because there is no red flag. I want to be really, really clear on this. I don't even like using the phrase red flag anymore, because red flag, there are so many different ways that you can do this. And it's, I really wish that lawmakers would talk more and educate people more about the legal pathways through which someone can be rendered ineligible. I know people who have done it. And it is whenever you're talking about removing a right, especially if the action of doing so could establish a precedent that could affect millions. There is a very careful pathway that must be traveled, and it is done so because we make sure that we protect rights, and we also make sure that the other side, the person whose rights are, you know, in question, that this is, that they are being justly heard. This is all about due process. And so in Tennessee doesn't have, you know, red flag laws, because you don't need red flag laws if you follow the current legal pathways that are offered. All red flag laws do is break down any additional defense or protections for the person who is being accused, for the lack of a better way to put it, the respondent, meaning they can be brought, they it's an ex parte process. For red flag laws, you don't have to inform the person whose rights you are about to terminate. The penalty is rendered, and then justice is, then you get to have your say in front of the judge, only after you're punished first. And it is very, very expensive once a penalty is rendered to undo it. And there's not a single state that has a protection against this. Oh, you didn't know that, did you? You're on the hook for the cost. And in many, many instances, and I've cited a lot of this in my book, Flyover Nation. I've written tons of stuff that are on my old website, danalash.com, and also at Chapter and Verse over at Substack. In many instances, so many instances where people can and do fight this, they win. It's a majority. So we got to be careful. And a lot of times, too, with these processes, a lot of them, it could be any Tom, Dick, or Harry that knows someone. Some of them, they just have police or family. Some states have police or family, and others, it's like coworkers or, you know, exes or something like that. That's a little over the top. So my whole point in saying this is that because this individual was already under care for mental illness, and the parents believe that this mental illness that their daughter had could potentially cause her to be violent, that they didn't want her owning firearms. And apparently, I mean, I would have to think that maybe this was shared by the medical professional under whose care she was apparently seeking treatment. So why was nothing done? That's the million-dollar question. I said this on Jesse Waters' program last night on Fox. Why was nothing done? And this is this is a term that a lot of people don't like, but there is a legal meaning to it. And I'm bringing this up because a friend of mine was sharing this, linking to Cornell, and it was they were talking about this on Twitter with Tennessee law. The phrase is mental defective. That's a legal term, because when that legal term is invoked, this is why I say words have meanings. And when you use specific words that have legal weight in established law, certain things come into play. And so when they say, you know, if this person was considered to be a danger to others, and it was because their mental illness, and as I mentioned last night, not everyone who is mentally ill is violent. And in some instances, people who are mentally ill and have violent tendencies, the only people they want to be violent against are themselves. So I want to be really careful in how we talk about this, because I think the left does a huge disservice to the issue of mental health awareness, because they talk about it in very general terms, which I think it discourages people from going and seeking mental health treatment, because immediately the left applies this, you know, generalized definition that everyone is dangerous or everyone is violent or all this stuff. And that's not the case at all. But there are people who do have mental illness that absolutely it contributes to potential for violence. And this was one of those cases. So if this person was a danger, if she was a danger to herself and a danger to others, then why was she not declared legally mentally defective? Why? No one did anything. No one said anything. Not the doctor, not the parents, no one. So you tell me why in the world we have to go and again focus on an inanimate object when every warning sign was present and every person around who saw it did nothing. I reject calls for red flag laws because there have been two states where two mass shootings have occurred and they had red flag laws. It doesn't matter when people don't even use the legal pathways open to them now. Making it easier to take away someone's due process doesn't expedite that issue because they don't use it. People are focusing on the guns and they don't focus on the issue, which makes me think you don't care about the issue. You want to flex on guns. We've been having the same damn dance for a decade, if not longer. Audio soundbite 3. One of the dumbest Republicans to ever breathe, John Kasich out of Ohio. Listen.
There are a lot of changes that can be made, limiting the clips that a person can be able to purchase. Right. The red flag laws, waiting periods for purchasing. Eliminating some of these weapons, you're going to do it specifically because there's workarounds, but ways in which you can get rid of things like the AR-15. But Andrea, until people start to go into the streets and protest, we're not going to see the changes. In my state, had I been able to get 5,000, 10,000 people on the lawns of the state house, the politicians would have passed what I wanted. Oh my gosh. We couldn't get them mobilized. I was reading this morning.
Okay. One of the first, I will say this. I was only 12 seconds into that video when I watched it last night before I was done. Well, we got to start talking about limiting the access to these clips. Do you know why words are important? People don't have minuscule fights over wording to try to flex. When I and other people latch on to stuff like this, we're not doing it to flex, to show how much we know about guns or how well informed we are over firearm law. But there's a reason why we're objecting when wrong terms are used, because terminology is a part of the law. Certain parts of the law and certain penalties come into play depending on the terminology involved. That is why if you're going to profess to have the zeal and passion for the issue, then your education on it should match your zeal. Anyone who doesn't is disqualified from discussing it, in my opinion. I owe you no audience. I owe you no sincerity. I owe you no attention. You muddle up the conversation like the turd in the punch bowl at a party and everyone's thirsty. This is one of those examples. He's sitting here talking about clips and this and that. And then here you just had someone shoot up a church and a school. It was a terror attack against Christians. These Republicans and people like Liz Cheney, too. I'm going to talk about this here in a second. You have these people that say they're not talking about the actual issue. And he says this stuff right after there was a shooting. He's like, well, you have a trans domestic terrorist goes out and kills kids because they're angry because the Christians didn't validate her self-perception. So apparently the media thinks it's justified that people died because they didn't validate her self-perception. And he's calling for people to go out into this. Well, you just go out in the streets, take away the guns. Oh, my gosh. Liz Cheney had tweeted. I'll make this quick. She had tweeted last night and I kind of went off because I was mad. Look, for anybody who sits here and believes this stupid operative narrative of the Bushes and DeSantis, they hate him. Look, Karl Rove has been entertaining Mike Pompeo, and he's had Dan Crenshaw, Mike Pompeo, and Mike Pence down in Austin a couple of times. Nobody from Florida gets an invite. And the only reason I know is because there's little bits come out in local Austin papers, and that's why. So she was taking pot shots at Florida banning books. I'm trying to find where I'd said this. I may have to come back to it. But she was taking some pot shots about it, saying that, discussing how they ban books, but they don't do anything about gun violence and all this stuff. And I just thought it was asinine that you have a Republican who's sitting here talking about, books that are showing. And I shared an image on Twitter. It's disgusting. But, you know, she was lamenting the removal of books, including the genderqueer one, where it shows minors engaged in oral sex. And she tweeted, "Oh, thank you, Jenna Bush Hager, for making this point. If we really want to keep our kids safe, we should spend less time banning books and more time stopping horrific gun violence in our schools." She was defending, apparently, the graphic illustrations of, you know, minors and sex, that it, when it was parents that just simply wanted to consent before they appeared in junior high libraries. You know, it's also possible, Liz, that you can deal with both of these issues, by the way, age-inappropriate graphic novels and taxpayer-funded children's libraries and school safety at the same time. You know, but I don't know. Maybe we should just take lessons from your dad. Don't go hunting with him.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I'm so sorry I didn't shut up last segment. I'm so sorry. Okay, so first and foremost, Kane, probiotic supplements may do the opposite of boosting your gut health. Stop it. Multi-billion dollar industry. It's a scam. Populate your gut with bacteria? Maybe. Studies show that it doesn't have any effect. Mark Hamill lends Star Wars, his Star Wars voice, to Ukrainian air raid app. I can't stand him. I do think this is kind of weird. It'll say attention air raid alert and it proceed to near a shelter, and then it will finish everything with may the force be with you. I apologize for the short headline segment, but Vivek Ramaswamy's next.
Want a behind-the-scenes look at The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana's chapter and verse newsletter for a deeper dive in all things Dana at danalash.com.
Welcome back to the program. Your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash here. You can listen coast to coast all around the country. You can also stream the program Facebook, YouTube, and watch the simulcast, also Facebook, YouTube, on Channel 347 DirecTV, which just changed recently, so I always hesitate. Don't forget to sign up for the newsletter, chapter and verse, over at Substack also. Okay, so we've talked about a lot of stuff the past 2.5 hours, and I have not at all this week touched on the elephant in the room. I mean, I guess, you know, pun intended, the GOP primary coming up for 2024. And we always say, gosh, I hope it's not a slap fight, because it's always a slap fight. But I just don't like doing my political opponents work for them. I really don't like to do that. And I always am wondering who's going to be the candidate that I never thought I would see that enters the primary. There's always someone who enters, and it's always, for the lack of a better way to explain it, I can just say it's like the Ross Perot category. I don't know how to put it. Like someone who is either in business or finance, I thought maybe, you know, maybe tech, that comes just out of nowhere and is running for presidency. Sometimes I think that those people keep all of the other candidates in check when it comes to talk about business and finance. But one of those candidates this time around, my only question is how well it's going to work if they're not known as all the other primary candidates. Vivek Ramaswamy is a 37-year-old former biotech executive, and he's done very well for himself financially. So he knows taxes, he knows business, he knows finances, he understands basic math, which I don't think every political candidate does. This should be, like, you know, a requirement. And he's already announced, he's one of the first ones out there announcing his candidacy for 2024. And of course, Harvard grad, and Vivek joins us now via Skype. Vivek, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Good to talk to you, Dana. How you doing?
Doing well. It's this is shaping up to be one of the wildest, I think, Republican primaries coming up. And I've been looking forward to talking with you, because my first question is, why in the world do you want to subject yourself to this? Why on earth would you get into the mud pit? And I honestly think that the Republican primaries are meaner than Democrat primaries. Why do this?
So, Dana, it's honestly because I'm patriotic about this country. I actually believe in this country. I have lived the full arc of the American dream. But I'll tell you this, I was born in 1985. If I had been born just 20 years later, I don't think my story would have been possible in the same way. I really mean that. And so for me, I'm not just running as a guy who, yes, has built successful businesses, yes, has had success in business. As you said, there is one of those in every presidential race. This isn't just that. For those who actually do know me and have been following me for the last 3 years, I also wrote the book Woke Inc. I wrote Nation of Victims, really shaping much of the conservative agenda in the so-called culture war that you see today. Well, the positive side of that came from actually the work that I've been doing for several years as a national leader behind the scenes. And I think the reason I'm in this race is I think the leader of this country who takes our country to the next level, who revives the answer to even what it means to be American today, something my generation has forgotten, that person can't just be pushing somebody else's agenda. This isn't a 999 tax plan like Herman Cain, or this isn't a plan to reform Social Security. This is about reviving a missing national identity. Mm. And for better or worse, Dana, I'm not running on somebody else's vision. I'm running on my own vision for what it means to be American. And I'm all in for the America First agenda. I really am. I'm an unapologetic America First conservative. But to put America first, we need to rediscover what America is. And if there's a president who's going to do that, who's going to actually dismantle the managerial bureaucracy in the federal administrative state that stands as an obstacle to our national identity, it's going to have to be done not by some plastic politician who's a career bureaucrat or a career politician, but somebody who's an outsider. There's two people in this race who fit that description, Donald Trump and myself. And I think that is why pretty soon this will be a two-horse race between Trump and myself. Now, I can tell you why I'm in this race and intend to go the distance, but that's how we're looking at this.
Now, you've said before that you were inspired to get to run, and I've read an interview, you said you were inspired to run because you saw that Trump came out in 2016 from, you know, kind of the Hollywood business boardroom sphere and decided to enter politics. And you saw that and thought, you know, that maybe means that this could happen again, that, you know, you could, that you don't have to be from D.C. You don't have to be a swamp creature. You don't have to be someone who's embedded in politics to run. Is that true? If so, what would you do differently from him in your campaign as opposed to what he did?
Yeah, so it wasn't just the political analysis of it, Dana, to say, oh, an outsider can do it, therefore I'll do it. No, I actually respect that it took an outsider to actually bring a baseball bat to the administrative state. You couldn't have seen someone who was a product of that system do it. Now, I think you only get to be an outsider once. And just like I don't expect I'll be the same person 8 years from now after going through what this experience will entail. I don't think I'll be the same person then as I am now. But I've got fresh legs under me. So it's not Trump today. It's Trump in 2015 that actually I took inspiration from, which I think there's a difference between the two. Now, I think that what would I do differently? Well, I think part of it is building on a foundation that he laid. So I recognize accomplishments where I call them out. I'll call it like I see it. He accomplished a lot. But I think we can go even further, go the actual distance. And so the issues I'm taking on, many of them include issues that even Trump danced around very gently. I've said I'm going to end affirmative action. That is something that a U.S. president can do. Lyndon Johnson created it by executive order. Any U.S. president since then could have ended it by executive order. I personally pushed Trump's people, policy team, on why they didn't. The answer was they said that's not a political hill they wanted to die on. Well, I'm willing to take that on head on. I've been very clear about that. The climate cult, unleashing American energy, that's only going to happen if we actually abandon the demands of this new climate religion in America. No other Republican is able to take that on head on in the same way I am. Using the military to end the fentanyl crisis south of our own border, shutting down the FBI, shutting down the U.S. Department of Education. These are all just examples of policies I've already committed to. But the key question then is, why am I able to do that? First of all, forget a plastic politician or a career politician, even the Ron DeSantis of the world, if I may say so expressly. They're not going to be able to do it if they're beholden to a donor class. But Trump is an outsider, too. But I think I intend to go even further than Trump did with the America First agenda, take it to the next level, but also do it in a way that unifies this country. Because you know what the way to do that is? You do it from a strong moral foundation with moral authority. And you know what? I am a proud parent, believer in God, two kids in a stable family, married to my wife. I think that when we do it with a strong moral foundation as a leader, we don't just preach family values. We don't just preach faith. We actually practice what we preach as leaders to say that I want a leader in the White House who's both an outsider and somebody I can look my son in the eye and say, I want you to grow up to be like him. With that, I think we can do what Reagan did in the 1980s. And we were in a national identity crisis in the late 70s. Exactly. We were in a national identity crisis in the 70s. Reagan led us out of it with moral authority. That's what I'm intending to do in 2024.
We're talking with Vivek Ramaswamy. And I like what you've written about culture war and wokery. I mean, I too think that it's weird that E Pluribus Unum, which is our motto, has been weaponized and used against us, inverted. It's bizarre. I want to check your temperature on some issues that you don't have a record on, because this was my concern, to be frank, with Trump in 2016. It's why I went for a governor. I always go, usually governors are, if it's an open Republican primary, I lean towards like governors, because I'm like, okay, it's like President Junior in a way. And I look for a record or something that I can measure. So let me take your temperature on some other stuff. Would you abolish the IRS, for instance?
I would be strongly inclined to abolish the IRS. So we've identified a list of agencies that we're going to commit to shutting down. I've already committed to three of them, the Department of Education. I've committed to shutting down the FBI. I've also committed to shutting down the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which has gone too far in standing in the way of nuclear energy. I've also said that we would cut 90% of the employees in the U.S. Federal Reserve from about 22,000 to less than 2,000, which is what the Federal Reserve actually needs. The IRS is actually next on our list. So I'm a big believer in not just spouting off, Dana. We're digging deep in this. I'm very favorably disposed to either a Federal Reserve style 90% plus headcount reduction in the IRS, or possibly just reevaluating, like with the FBI, shutting it down and building something small from scratch to take its place. But that's exactly the mentality I'm bringing to this, which no Republican president has ever done.
What about the ATF? There's a lot of people, I don't think that this sentiment was the same 10 years ago, but a lot of people on the right now definitely have been criticizing the ATF, particularly after we've seen regulatory abuses, like also with the CDC. I mean, it's really less about firearms and more about agencies creating rules that are treated as law and circumventing Congress. What about like the ATF?
And circumventing the Constitution in the process, right? Because the Constitution sets into motion a three-part system of government without a fourth branch of government that actually, in a waterfall of political accountability, actually controls most of the show today.
Right.
So I think that CDC, ATF, FDA, SEC, a lot of EPA, a lot of these are on the list. And even after West Virginia versus EPA, this key case from the Supreme Court last year, I think a lot of the behaviors of that entire administrative state are unconstitutional as written. So part of this is actually just acting with executive authority to put those agencies back in their place, Dana, not by going to Congress and asking them to abolish it. I'm talking about by executive order. Because if that's unconstitutional action in the executive branch itself, you need neither the permission nor the forgiveness of Congress to actually shut it down. And I'm a believer in Article 2 of the Constitution that says that the President of the United States actually runs, who would have ever thought, the duly elected president runs the executive branch rather than an unelected permanent state. And if you think about the ATF and you think about Heller, you think about a lot of the evolution in jurisprudence around actually what the Second Amendment means. If you have a government agency that's completely antithetical, acting antithetical to even the Constitution, as interpreted by a current Supreme Court, that empowers the chief executive to actually execute the actual laws of the United States rather than what the administrative state would like the laws to have been.
I mean, that's definitely the way to do it, or a pathway to do it, for sure. Some people will say we're talking with Vivek Ramaswamy, who's running for president in 2024. You've read his books on CRT, DEI, wokery, all of it with culture war. Now, some say, you know, Trump talked a great game about the wall and immigration, but never actually got the wall built. I mean, and especially when we were controlling Congress, I mean, wasn't even able to wrangle Republicans in Congress to, you know, do what was necessary to make that happen. How do you overcome that? Because, you know, that was his big talking point going into the election in 2016. How do you not end up the same?
So I'm coming at this from a unique combination here, Dan. On one hand, I'm a constitutional scholar. I went to Yale Law School, whole nine yards. You see a lot of the legal analyses in my books, articles, scholarship. On the other hand, I'm a business person who brings a very practical understanding of how to get things done. So I'll say this. Trump actually had to both expose the problem and solve it. He had 4 years. He at least exposed the problem and began to solve some of it. Now, my view on the border is you can't just use the wall. That alone would have been insufficient. Mm-hmm. Certainly today, you have a Swiss cheese of a southern border with or without a wall, effectively abating the fentanyl crisis responsible for 100,000 plus deaths per year in the U.S. I think you need to use the wall and use the military to secure the border. Here again, it comes to a constitutional understanding. This is not with congressional permission. I, as commander-in-chief of the United States, intend to use our military to protect our own border. That is controversial.
Would you treat the cartels as terrorists?
Absolutely. But treating them as terrorists is not just what other people mean, which is freezing their financial assets. That's what they're talking about. That's table stakes. If I want to treat them as terrorists, I'm going to treat them like bin Laden, al-Zawahiri, treat them like Soleimani. I'm talking about targeted drone strikes, airstrikes, actually kill the head of the snake when it comes to the fentanyl crisis in the U.S. That is a legitimate use of force. And if we can do it to ISIS on the other side of the world, we can do it in Mexico. A little bit of an operational point here, Dana, and I've learned a lot about this. The NSA has dedicated no intelligence resources whatsoever to Mexico. All of it's gone to the Middle East. Well, if we did even a fraction of that attention to what we were able to do to ISIS in Iraq and Syria, to be able to do that south of the border to the failed narco state that is Mexico, there's the fentanyl crisis over in one fell swoop. That's a first 6 month item that I intend to deliver on as president.
I don't mean to rush you. I want to make sure we get, because there's at least one more other question I want to get to before we wrap here, because radio, I mean, obviously they'll push us into commercials. But so last week, two huge headlines came out of the meeting with Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping. Xi Jinping was in Moscow. It was a really weird thing to see them walking with all the Russian military, etc. That came out of it that China had brokered a normalized relations deal between Saudi Arabia and Iran. But then also interesting, Vladimir Putin announced that they're going to be trading and doing business in Chinese currency. So there went the petrodollar. What would a Vivek presidency or an economic plan to counter that and restore dominance to the American dollar look like?
Well, you want to start with the dominance for the American dollar. It actually starts with American dominance on the fundamentals, starting with energy. So you're going to talk about the petrodollar. What have we done under the Biden administration? We have shot ourselves in the foot when it comes to our own production of fossil fuels, including natural gas, including oil, and yes, including coal, even though that's a four-letter word, literally and figuratively to a lot of people. So I think that energy security is inextricably linked to national security. I don't think Putin would have invaded Ukraine if the United States actually had the ability to supply both the U.S. and Western Europe as recently as we did even in 2019 and 2020. So my presidency is all about unapologetically unleashing American capabilities. Drill, frack, burn coal, embrace nuclear.
Expand refineries.
Of course, expand refineries, solve the permitting process that the administrative state stands in the way of today. That is how we achieve both energy security, GDP growth, and most importantly, national security versus our adversaries. And I'm going to deliver it. And again, a professional politician, Dana, they're just not going to get the job done in the White House. I'm going to come in as an outsider, but with a bone-deep constitutional conviction that will allow me to see this through. That's why I'm in this race.
Man, they would hate you in D.C. Why would you?
Oh, they already do.
Yeah, they hate you already. Vivek Ramaswamy, it's very good to talk with you. This is our first time talking. You had some really good ideas, and this is a good first conversation. I'd love to have you back and talk some more. I know I'm going to be on your podcast as well, so we'll continue the conversation. But thanks for joining us. Good to have you.
Looking forward to it.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
Welcome back to the program. So you can catch our discussion with Vivek on YouTube. We'll have it up there on Facebook as well. I was telling Kane, I'm like, I think that if it, depending on how everything gets distilled down as more and more people jump into, if you know, I'm because DeSantis isn't running. Everyone, you know, I mean, I don't even know when he would announce if he were to announce. And I'm sure other people are going to get in. But then as it distills down with debates, I think that Ramaswamy has the potential to keep everybody in the beginning because he's going to build nationwide name ID. That's what gets him. But I think that he'll keep people. He'll probably make them more honest in terms of talking about, you know, taxes and how far they're willing to go to cut certain things. But I will say, I told Kane really quickly that one of the things that worked that would work against him before 2008 actually works for him now, and that he's not a boomer. Right. All right, Kane, today in stupidity.
All right, it's Karine Jean-Pierre. Boy, she has not an easy job, but she's also not good at it, so weird combination. She's talking about the reason there are no assault weapons ban is not because of this president or Democrats, even though they had, what? Full majority, White House, House, Senate.
Yeah, and under Obama, they held the supermajority for the first part of Obama's first
term.
Here's
what she says.
He can. The reason that there's no assault weapons ban is not because of this president. It's not because of Democrats in Congress.
Oh, what?
Republicans in Congress need to look in the mirror.
In the mirror. Okay.
No, they never, Democrats never deliver for their base, whether it's on this issue, student loans, anything else. They're all promises, all talk, but all they want is all power. Have a great night. Back with you tomorrow.